Hello and welcome to the Tech for Climate podcast. I'm Guillaume, your host, and each week I'm fortunate to share with you stories from climate tech founders, investors, and corporations sharing their unique insights into this fast-moving industry. Eventually, like me, you will learn, discover, and get inspired by those unique men and women who are contributing to the fight against climate change, and I hope it will help you to take a step in this formidable movement. So before we start, I just want to share a few words about us, as this podcast is just the tip of the iceberg of what we do at Startup Basecamp to support climate tech movement. Our mission is to accelerate capital deployment towards climate tech founders, allowing them to focus on scaling their solutions. How do we do that? Every day, we help founders access to resources and connections and gain the visibility they need to expand their growth. We do this in a number of ways with a membership platform, a Slack group with a growing number of founders, investors, and experts from around the world. And recently, we went one step further with a matching services to connect founders with top climate tech investors. Keep in mind that we are able to do all of this thanks to the support of our listeners and our members. So please like and subscribe, share one episode with a friend, join a community, and if you haven't already done so, make a small donation to support our work. It really means the world to us. And now, enjoy the show! Hi everyone, in this new episode of Founder Series, let's explore the innovative world of 1S1 Energy and their renewable hydrogen technology. Together, we will uncover how they are revolutionizing the green hydrogen sector by creating next-generation materials that enhance the efficiency and durability of fuel cells, electrolysis stacks. Their mission? To dismantle the barriers of traditional hydrogen production and spearhead a global movement towards a sustainable emission-free future. Let's meet Daniel Sobeck, co-founder and CEO of 1S1 Energy, whose eclectic engineering background in aerospace, mechanical and electrical disciplines fuels his passion for solving some of the world's most complex and pressing problems. Let's discover the story of a visionary who sees every problem as an opportunity for innovation and societal impact. This episode focuses into the critical role of hydrogen in decarbonizing our economy, innovative strides made by 1S1 Energy and electrolyzer technology, and the broader implication for global energy markets. We explore the complexities of potential of green hydrogen, its applications, production challenges, and the regulatory landscape. Join me as we discuss the genesis and growth of 1S1 Energy, the economic dynamics of their solutions compared to the traditional methods, and how they stand out in the global market. In the second part of the show, Daniel emphasized the importance of aligning a product with market needs and securing validation straight from the source. Next, he advocates for the urgency of generating revenue swiftly, highlighting the balance between rapid growth and maintaining product integrity. He also shares insights into achieving work-life harmony, advocating for strategic work intensity, and the importance of perspective exercise, good nutrition, and adequate sleep. Daniel, welcome to the show. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the Tech for Climate podcast. I'm super happy to have you here with us today. I believe it's going to be a great opportunity to hear your story and get up to speed on what you guys are doing with 1S1 Energy, which is on the mission to enabling a carbon-free economy by catalyzing the adoption of renewable hydrogen within this decade, which is super exciting. And more specifically, at 1S1, you guys are developing the next generation material for fuel cells and electrolysis stacks, seeking to significantly improve their performance and durability. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Guillaume. It's a pleasure to be here. Happy to tell you about 1S1. Yeah,
definitely. So before we start, I'd like to get a 30-second intro about 1S1 from you.
Yes, we founded OneS1 in December of 2019 with an interest in having an impact in climate change. And we wanted to work on a technology that scales and decided early on to work on hydrogen, more precisely green hydrogen. So we started our investigation by doing a techno-economic analysis of the different technologies and looking at limitations. And decided early on that PEM electrolysis, proton exchange membrane electrolysis, has the best fundamentals to produce hydrogen at a low levelized cost of hydrogen. And then we started looking at the limitations of the technology and decided that the main limitations are associated with the materials used for the electrochemical cell. And very early on decided to innovate on the materials and come up with new fundamental ideas on how to improve them. So that's how we started the company. Yeah.
Fantastic. And we'll circle back onto the genesis of the company a little bit later on
sure.
This episode. So before we start, let's start from the top. I mean, we like to focus on the speaker and the guest at first. So can you tell us a bit more about your personal story and background? I mean, what are you passionate about? What do you do besides building 1S1 Energy? What makes you feel inspired or like your best self? I mean, as I always ask, like, who is Daniel?
Oh, thank you for the question. So I have a background in engineering with degrees in aerospace, mechanical, and electrical engineering, and have always been interested in solving problems that are difficult, that are complex and difficult to solve. So that's what drives me, and also impact significant problems for society. So that has been my focus over my whole career. So first in semiconductors, then in bioanalytical instrumentation, and in my entrepreneurial career in biology and medical devices, and now also electrochemical devices. Yeah.
Looking back at this this career and this whole journey that you had so far, maybe if you can like look back and say, okay, maybe there's like one or two piece of experiences here that in a way gave me an edge to start 1S1 Energy.
It's solving significant problems that are difficult to solve is what drives me. Trying to think. So, for example, with our CTO, we worked early on diagnostics for cancer and breast cancer based on deep tissue imaging as well. So, in collaboration with a professor at Stanford. We worked on something very challenging, which is non-invasive brain interfaces. So this is measuring brain signals using optics, near-infrared spectroscopy, and also magnetic sensing. So that was very interesting. And more recently, wanted to work on something that has even more of an impact, which is dealing with climate change. So
maybe you can just like tell us a little bit like what would eventually like your aha moment, if any, to really decide to know based on the different work and hat that you were wearing during your prior starting 1S1. What is the aha moment that defined you really like this willingness of I want to put my time and effort on fighting or finding solution that can help against climate change? Any specific moment that you can recall or would define as such?
No, just thinking of the future, the impact of climate change on future generations and leaving a legacy long term. And it crystallized around maybe October of 2019. And that's when I started talking about it with my team So these are people I've known for a long time, and we decided to launch a company.
So before we start going into detail about 1S1RG, we'd like to zoom out and kind of understand the overall context that you are surfing on. So together, we prior to this interview, we defined that we'd like to understand a bit more about the hydrogen production challenges and opportunities to decarb the economy with this focus on the electrolyzer as this really your core competencies here. So maybe to put things back into perspective prior to dive into the technologies in place today to produce hydrogen. Maybe let's first focus on hydrogen per se and its application. So maybe if you could, you know, help us to understand, because we hear a lot about like hydrogen as a super exciting opportunities, but also like sometimes a little bit like the silver bullet to solve all the problems that the world have. A lot of controversies as well with this rainbow of colors to produce hydrogen. I mean, why does hydrogen matter as a source of energy to decarbonize our economy? I mean, which hydrogen application are the most appropriate economically and feasible today to use hydrogen as a primary source of energy?
Yeah, so today there are around 90 to 100 million tons of hydrogen being produced around the world. Primary use is ammonia production. So it's hard to ammonia. Nitrogen is important for growing crops at the rate that we need to sustain the world at this point. And ammonia provides a vehicle to do this in fertilizers. So that's the main application. It's also being used for desulfonation of oil and gas. That will not be as relevant in the future. And then there are new applications like direct reduction of iron for steel making to make green steel, and also other existing applications such as used hydrogen for semiconductors and glass making and so forth. But green hydrogen is only used for maybe no more than 1% of these activities. So there's a lot of room to implement it to reduce carbon dioxide that is generated using conventional methods.
So double clicking on the electrolyzer per se, I mean, if you could like, you know, refresh our non-technical audience, like how does it work? I mean, what are the advantages and inconvenience, you know, that technology has to produce hydrogen compared to the other ones in place? I mean, according to you, which are the current production challenges and upcoming opportunities that you see with the electrolyzer technology?
Yeah, so hydrogen right now is primarily being made using methane, from methane or from coal, so coal gasification. Both are methods produce significant emissions of carbon dioxide. So the in contrast, green hydrogen is produced using renewable energy to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. So on the anode of an electrolyzer, we have the oxygen evolution reaction that produces oxygen and protons. The protons move through the cell through a proton exchange membrane that separates the oxygen side and the hydrogen side, and then they combine to hydrogen at the cathode. And that's the hydrogen that's produced in an electrolyzer. And there are inefficiencies in this process. Main inefficiency is the transport or the movement of these protons, which is H+, through the membrane. And by improving the membrane, you can reduce these inefficiencies significantly. And that's what we're focused on. So
and
that's the first. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
So that's the lowest hanging fruit, improving the membrane. And then there's an opportunity to improve the catalysts that are being used for the oxygen evolution reaction and for the hydrogen side. And in that sense, we can make use lower amounts of platinum group metals to implement the catalyst, or use catalysts that are non-platinum group metals as well to reduce the cost of electrolyzers.
Okay, so to go one step further in the understanding of the general context, if you could maybe refresh the audience to understand, like, how is this market of hydrogen organized today? I mean, who are the main producers, and where are they located in the world? And in a way, what is their incentive to decarbonize their own production?
Well, there are several technologies being implemented. One is alkaline electrolyzers. That's the most traditional technology. It uses electrolyte with potassium hydroxide. And they tend to be less efficient in general, and also not as being able to work at low capacity levels. And then you have the what we're working on, which is the proton exchange membrane electrolyzers, and then solid oxide electrolyzers as well. Production is all over the world, so there's a concentration in Europe, in Sweden and Germany, and also China, and mostly. And also there are new players coming in with new technologies and different improvements to the technology. So we're one of them working on next generation technologies.
And how do you see this this different, like, market and those different, like, producer as of today? I mean, do you see, like, any incentive for them to really, like, move the ball towards, like, a fully green, hydrogen production? Or what's the incentive for them to adopt better technologies and move towards, like, a better, like, or cleaner production in itself?
Well, there's a great deal of demand for electrolyzers, so this was a very small market, and incumbents are expanding their production significantly to meet that demand. Production capacity is fully committed until, I believe, 2026, the existing capacity. So everybody's ramping up production right now of the different technologies, and with that comes pains in doing this very fast, and I can argue that there are important mistakes being made that are very costly. Yeah, but it's normal in an uncertain expanding market that we're experiencing right now. Yeah.
So looking at a little bit at the regulatory framework, I mean, what are the current regulation in place, the one that you think are missing, and the one that are blocking or slowing down the adoption and I would say the growth of that market in itself? Do you see anything like incentivizing or blocking down or slowing it down? Which one do you think is missing, if any?
Well, there's a push to incentivize the deployment of renewable hydrogen. The issue is that it has to be put in the context of optimizing the whole decarbonization effort. And so there are push-pull situations where that optimization is not ideal for the people deploying electrolyzers. So, for example, the governments don't want electrolyzers to employ existing renewable energy. They want deployment of new renewable energy to support electrolyzer deployment. So there's a natural tension between all the different types of regulations, but I think they'll sort themselves out with time.
And do you see any difference between the US market and the European market in terms of regulation and incentivization for the electrolyzer and hydrogen market per se?
Well, we started, the European market, the incentives for the European market started earlier than in the US. And I think the US regulations have been, or incentives are being done from learning from the European market. In a sense, they're similar. So I don't think that it's this issue of optimizing globally the transition to a decarbonized world, and so there are natural tensions different competing interests and lots of discussions about that. But I think in the long term, everything will harmonize into a common set of incentives and regulations.
So to close this this section, you mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, at the beginning of the conversation, that only 1% of the hydrogen produced today globally could be considered as green hydrogen. How do you see this transition happening? Like, do you see, and how realistic it is for this 1% to grow until the, is there a ceiling cap where green hydrogen will never be able to complete the 100% demand worldwide?
I think there's uncertainty, and in the face of uncertainty, it's easy to get into cognitive closure one way or another. So it's hard to tell. But there are regions in the world that are especially suited for the adoption of green hydrogen, where you have a great deal of renewable energy, and also of sources of renewable energy of high capacity factor. So the economic conditions are prime for deploying green hydrogen. So one of those places is Brazil. So Brazil has 80 to 90% renewable energy. They have excess renewable energy and with high capacity factor sources, hydro and nice wind corridors. So it's an ideal location to deploy electrolyzers. And also they don't have much of a local production for nitrogen-based fertilizers. So it's also because of that is a very nice location for deploying electrolyzers. So there are places like that in the world where the economics work and all the conditions are ideal for deploying hydrogen.
Okay. Anything that you would like to add to this more I would say market overview that we didn't cover?
No, I think there's a lot of uncertainty. There's issues with how hydrogen is deployed. There's a lot of learning. There are issues with how the production is scaled and with robustness of equipment that makes it to the field. And with time, they'll sort themselves out. And that gives people that are developing next generation technologies time to catch up with incumbents. And so that's something very exciting to us. Yeah, as well.
So let's go deeper into 1S1 Energy. I mean, you already uncovered a bit the story behind it. Maybe you can tell us a bit more about how you met also Tiago, who is part of your team, and that we have the chance to have often within our different events here. Which gap did you identify at first or initially that led to the current version of 1S1 Energy? I mean, why did 1S1 Energy, in a way, have to exist?
To make electrolyzers economically viable. And that means improving the materials. So we're changing the rules of the game by developing new materials, and also that are more efficient and durable. And that changes the whole economics of electrolyzers. So that has been the focus. As we're doing this, we found out that the materials we're developing for electrolyzers also apply to fuel cells. And that is becoming an early source of revenue for us as well. So that's also a very exciting aspect of what we're doing.
So diving a little bit into the engineering part of it, I'm not an engineer, so full disclosure, and a lot of people in the audience might not be as well. So I will ask you, like, maybe if you can walk us through a little bit the process again for non-engineers. I mean, how does it work if my grandmother was on the show and asking you for to explain what you do, if you could help us to understand, like, to visualize the process and understand your secret sauce at 1S1.
Okay, so we're using renewable energy to split water into oxygen and hydrogen. And we're trying to do this efficiently as possible and using materials that are as durable as possible. And that impacts economics of making the hydrogen. The main element of the electrochemical cell is the proton exchange membrane in terms of the improving efficiency. And right now they're being made with ion exchange group that allows the transport of the protons through the membrane that is called sulfonic acid. And this group has inherent limitations. One is that it poisons the catalyst. So the activity of the catalyst is reduced over time. And the second one is that it's a source for the dissolution of the membrane through the redox conditions. So over time, the membrane thins down because of this ion exchange group. So we came up with a fundamental innovation, which is changing this group with something called tetravalent boron that does not poison the catalyst and that prevents deterioration of the membrane. So that changes the economics significantly. And then we're also working on the catalyst and how we integrate all of that into the electrolysis stacks as well.
Okay. So looking back at this all, research and development that you guys have been putting together, like, I mean, how long did it take your team to put together this the first prototype? I mean, what were the initial challenges and how did you overcome them? I mean, how did you get the necessary, like, tests to also after that reach the level where you could be of interest for large clients and groups?
Yeah, we're fortunate to have a very creative chief technology officer, Sukanta. And he came up very quickly with the ideas and were able to implement them very quickly. So by mid-2020, we already had some of the materials being tested by partners. So we're very fortunate to have him help us with this. And basically, we came up with very fundamental innovations in materials. We have a patent portfolio with 16 cases, four issue patents, and they're all very fundamental, so very broad. So we've been very fortunate, yeah. And also the ability to, we benefited from partners that were willing to test these materials early on.
I mean, how comes, like, no one thought about, like, or, you know, found this combination that you guys, developed now prior to that? Was it, like, because the interest in changing the existing technology was low, that no one was really, like, digging into it? Or what was this, uniqueness in a way?
Yeah, it's a very hard problem to solve, and we were audacious enough to try, and we got lucky, and it happened. Yeah, and also benefit from Sukanta's creativity, and so we're very fortunate. Yeah, and also to have partners willing to test very early on.
So looking a little bit at the company per se, I mean, what are the current and expected economics of 1S1 Energy? I mean, how much does it cost to use your technology inside of the electrolyzer versus other alternative in the market? Can you tell us about maybe also your business model that you guys have in place and this initial client base, your projection? So let's try to understand a bit more like the business side of it.
Okay, so we identify this fundamental technology that we think has the best fundamentals and also that can be implemented within a 10-year lifespan. So that was our first premise. And then we looked at the factors in the technology that we could improve. One of them is the efficiency of the technology. So we're improving that significantly. Second one is the durability. So you only need one stack change over a 20-year lifetime of the plant. So that's also a very significant improvement. And the third one is reducing the capex. So we're coming up with, we're reducing margins because we work with our own materials. And also we're coming up with methods of production that are inexpensive. So it's both the manufacturing methods and the materials that we're using. So all that gives you a combination that translates to a low levelized cost of hydrogen. So that's our main strategy with that. And then in terms of the product, we're focusing on electrolyzer modules. So this will be 1 megawatt modules, and they can be implemented like Legos in distributed applications, just a few of them, or in a centralized large plant where you would use hundreds of these modules.
Speaking a little bit about manufacturing capabilities that you guys have in place and developed as of today, I mean, can you tell us a bit more? Like, I mean, you're 2018, you started 2019, got the first, I would say, prototype and research, then 2020 until 2023. Like, how did you start like to produce really like in the lab? Do you guys have today like a small manufacturing or production chain? Can you tell us a bit more, like what is the status today and your vision in the next 5 years in that sense?
Yeah, so we've been very careful with the use of capital. So far we've only spent maybe $3 million using a contracting model, and now we're making the transition from this contracting model to developing our own infrastructure. And that will be done to support a piloting program that we have in place. So that's a $4 million pipeline of pilots to move from stacks that are 6 kilowatts capacity all the way to 100 kilowatts in the next year and a half, 2 years. So we're making that transition from a very careful operation to establishing our own infrastructure right now. We also applied to the Important Projects of Common European Interest program, and we're approved for that in 2022, and that will allow us to start establishing manufacturing capabilities in Europe as well.
Okay, looking a little bit at the current landscape in terms of competition. Can you tell us a bit more about like who is playing in the field right now? That is like in a way seeking for the same market share. How do you differentiate yourself? How are you guys maybe better? Tell us a bit more about this landscape.
Yeah. So it's a rapidly growing market with incumbents working on different technologies. None of the technologies are perfect or have been implemented to their potential. So we believe we have a solution that will be economically viable. Also, there are growing pains for everybody involved. So there are issues with manufacturing and robustness and how you deploy electrolyzers. So we're learning from the mistakes we're seeing and trying to come up with a solution that solves all of the growing pains that people are experiencing right now.
And looking at your specific stack in itself, so do you deploy and retrofit existing electrolyzer, or you deploy like new
It's a new engineering, it's our new electrolyzers, yeah. So it's not retrofitting existing technologies. And this is just, so what we will be producing is what we call a stack module. So it's a stack, the electrolyzer stack, plus a balance of system, but we won't be working on the balance of plant because that part of the equipment changes depending on how the electrolyzers are deployed. So we don't have the capability of working in that area right now. Yeah. It's just too much for a small company like ours. Yeah.
So closing up here on this section, maybe if you can tell us a bit about this market opportunity for you guys. I mean, how are you planning to scale this operation, and what are the steps to achieve it? I mean, what needs to happen? What's next for 1S1 Energy?
Yeah, so we do everything in a very measured way with being very careful about the use of capital. So our first production milestone is this 300 megawatt capacity production plant for electrolyzers. And then depending on the technology and the market's acceptance, we have plans to scale it up to 1.2 gigawatts. And then along the way, we have these opportunities to also commercialize components. So we have a lot of optionality right now. And then depending on how the market develops and our technology develops, we can decide of whether we're going to pursue this plan to make the electrolyzers or just focus on the components.
Okay, but thank you so much. Anything that you would like to add for the around the company aspect of it
for this No, interview? It's working with a very good group of people, and that has been a great pleasure for me personally, and I've learned a lot from my colleagues, and it's been the incredible experience for me, and you know, it's only the beginning, and we think we have a great future together.
So more personal question that I always ask on the show. I mean, what's your opinion, your personal opinion on the climate crisis? I mean, what would be your words to people who feel demoralized by all the consequences of climate change today? I mean, are we doomed? What would you tell them?
I don't think we're doomed. I think there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of how we're going to solve this problem. And uncertainty leads to frustration, and people want solutions now. And I think it will take a little bit of time for things to sort themselves out. But I see good trends in terms of decarbonizing the world, and it may take a little bit longer than what we expect, but I think it's going to happen. There are all these competing interests that are creating a lot of noise. But eventually things will sort themselves out. I believe in that strongly. Yeah.
How can the community of investors, founders, experts listening to the show can help you today?
Believing that the hydrogen has a place. There's a lot of noise associated with hydrogen, but there are many applications that are fundamental, and those are where the hydrogen is part of the molecule of what you're making. And those are very important applications, and I think they have a bright future in terms of return on investment.
Any question that I should have asked you that I didn't do for this first part of the show before we move into the My Secret Sauce section?
No, I cannot think of anything. No, thank you. That is a very thorough set of questions. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Daniel, for your time, your incredible insight on the industry. I'm so excited to see so many brilliant people like you putting so much effort to move the ball towards a carbon-free economy and a cleaner world. So thank you so much for coming today.
Okay. Thank you, Guillaume. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thanks again for joining us on the Tech for Climate podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned next week for more climate tech insights. In the meantime, head on over to our webpage at startupbasecamp.org, where we have lots more insights and resources for anyone wanting to get involved in climate tech. If you find our resources useful, please consider donating to support our small self-funded team. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends, and see you next time.